The year that this week's album was released contained echoes of 10 years prior, when Iraqi journalist Muntadir al-Zaidi chucked one of his shoes at GW. This time, it was Cardi B hucking a shoe at Nicki Minaj at a fashion show party. Both situations were no doubt laced with tension, and you can't help but feel like if either party had maybe put their best foot forward, they could have taken steps towards resolution. But that's a problem at the core of the human soul, isn't it? This week's artist styles herself with all three of her names, like a lot of great American authors and serial killers. She shares a first name with the actress who portrayed Professor Sybil Trelawney and a middle name with a Supreme Court justice. She keeps mighty company, to be sure. And now for a bit of in-house trivia for all you dedicated listeners. This week's album was recorded in a studio that shares the name of a musical which my co-host vehemently dislikes. I'll take Oscar snafus for 300, please, Alex. Have you guessed it yet? The year was 2018. The artist is Emma Ruth Rundle. That's Emma Thompson and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, if you're keeping track of the clues at home. And the album is On Dark Horses, today on Two Dudes and Tunes. You're listening to Two Dudes and Tunes, the podcast that seems to be designed to test Wood's tolerance of moody music. Wood, how you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm just glad you brought up the three-name artist thing. We'll get into moody music here in a minute. You definitely seem to have a thing for artists who either have one name or three names. It's like, either you get both barrels of the shotgun or all 10 names. Which one do you want?
Yeah, I'm not sure why that is. I mean, I don't really go by all three of my names in my professional life, but I've also never written a great American novel or killed more than like five or six people. So
it's funny. So after you wrote this show doc and everything, I was eating dinner just before I came up here and I was reading through your notes and getting ready to record this episode. And my son, Maverick, whose legal name is Wood English Johnson IV, was misbehaving, and Tiffany called him by all three names, and then finished it with the fourth. I was terrified she was chewing me up for something at first.
Oh, no.
It's like until she got to the fourth, I was like, oh, it's not me this time. Oh, thank God.
I'm off the hook. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I think I must be a sucker for all the, like, PR company ploys that go out there, because like Sting, I almost said U2, which is not anybody's name, but Bono.
Who's U2's last name?
Yeah, U2 Bono and U2 The Edge. But yeah, either that or I don't know. Three names just conveys importance. I think that's why news anchors always refer to serial killers by their three names.
Well, I think, too, it may have been something that started with artists who were like, hey, so-and-so is who I take my inspiration from. They used all three names, and then it becomes I can't be taken seriously as a moody, just upset kind of person unless I use all three of my names.
Yeah. One name is too flippant. You can't write deep, sad songs with just one name. You got to have the full weight of three names to like convince people you're serious.
And if you're really, really serious about it, you are What's-His-Face who had five names. From your list.
All first names. Dallas Green. Yeah, but he doesn't go by Dallas, John, David, Samuel, whatever. Thankfully.
True.
Oh man. Well, how's your week going, man? How you doing?
It's been a pretty good week overall. I'm kind of just chugging along. I've been working with my leadership team at work to kind of address some staffing shortages that we've had over the last couple of years since I've been in that job, and it's going to be good for me as far as instilling a little bit of work-life balance. It's going to be adding a level of management between me and some of the employees that I have, which will remove me a little bit from the day-to-day just shenanigans But mm-hmm. I'm going to run out of colorful stories to tell about things that are happening and I had to get involved in.
Well, no, because hopefully you'll have just the right amount of problems from these new underlings of yours. I'm sure unless you hire robots, the problems will never stop. They'll just kind of be removed from you a little bit.
I'm just hoping to go from getting about 1,500 emails a day, which need my attention, to like, let's say 700. That seems a little bit more manageable.
Oh, that sounds awful. You have all the red dots on your screen on your phone.
Exactly. It's not a joke when it's like 27,000 unread emails, because they really are 27,000 unread emails. It's not a mailing list.
Do you just like check your phone in the wastebasket and go like, well, time to get another phone. I'm never going to be able to finish this.
So I recently took 2 weeks off from work and I only checked my email a couple of times. And thankfully, my peer who covered for me did an excellent job. But when you come back from vacation and you literally have 60,000 emails piled up, you basically take the select all, mark as read, and if it's important, they'll reach back out to you again.
That's the greatest way to like weed out the chaff, is like, okay, if you really care, you won't put up with me ignoring you.
You'll pick it up. You'll pick up the phone and call me, or you'll hit me up again, because I'm not going to figure it out.
I love that. But, brilliant.
Nah, man. So I'm hoping good things come by that management change.
I'm
expecting to hear something in the next week or so. But and then just kind of as a fun little aside thing, Tiffany and I started watching We Are the Champions on Netflix. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but
it doesn't sound familiar.
It's a series of documentaries, like half hour long documentaries on weird championships. And so the first episode is on a cheese rolling event that happens in Gloucester, England, where they roll an 8-pound cheese down a hill that's a 45% grade, and people chase it down. And the first person to the bottom of the hill gets to keep the cheese. But they get, like, mangled and hurt. And so they did that. And then the next one is hottest chili eating competitions. And one is, you know, Mardi Gras decorations. Like, just crazy things to be, like, the world record holder of.
Oh, man.
And how serious these people take their passions. So I enjoy it. It's pretty good.
So as a fun aside, I've actually heard of that cheese wheel chasing festival, because when Dad was stationed in Germany, for part of that time, we lived on the economy, as they say. We basically rented a house, like, mm-hmm. instead of living on base. And so we had whatever the German cable service was and whatever European ESPN, like their equivalent basically of ESPN. And it had all kinds of crazy stuff. It had really neat stuff like that, like off-road rally car type racing thing, mm-hmm. where you have like a driver and a navigator. They had sumo wrestling, which we watched out of like half horror, half amazement. But we watched that festival 1 year. They had the like highlights from it, and it's brutal, man. Like, I love cheese, but I do not love cheese enough to chase it down a hill and like possibly get a concussion or a hairline fracture.
Well, and people like, they're dislocating shoulders, they're totally messing themselves up, and the cheese is hurtling down the hill. When it comes to a stop, its terminal velocity is 80 miles an hour. So there's this 8-pound block of cheese traveling 80 miles an hour, and it crashes into a fence. Like, if you're standing on the other side of the chicken wire fence and catch the cheese, it's going to hurt.
Yeah, not to mention it's probably picking up a lot of, like, grass and dirt. Like,
it's pretty
how much of the cheese are you having to cut away?
No. So that was the other thing about it. So it's a wheel of cheese, and they've been doing this ceremony or this thing for a couple hundred years, I guess. And part of the festival is they take the wheel of cheese to an old folks home, people who used to run the race, and they wrap it in masking tape. So it's still a perfect wheel of cheese when it's done.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So, I love that. I did not know that.
But anyway, that it's sounds worth like watching a fun on series. Netflix. It's entertaining.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out.
And I like watching shows where, like, I'm not a big fan of, like, really spicy food, but the Chili Peppers episode where you're watching a bunch of 50-year-old men cry because they've...
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man.
Like, that sounds like fun. Self-inflicted. I like that.
Yeah, you did that to yourself. It's not like, you know, America's Funniest Home Videos where it's people's toddlers whacking them in the nuts with a wiffle ball bat or whatever.
That's funny.
Although you could argue that those people did that to themselves as well.
Don't give that kid a weapon.
Don't have a kid.
Well, it's too late for me on that front.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But he seems to be delighting y'all, so I think it's turned out all right.
Oh, yeah. What else is new with you this week, man, now that I've monopolized our time?
No, you're good, man. So I am excited because for the first time in quite a while, I've got some paying work as a musician coming my way. A friend of mine that I played with at church needed an accompanist because hers couldn't make the gig, had like a last minute cancellation. And so it's 2 4-hour gigs.
Wow.
Which is a lot of music to familiarize yourself with, but thankfully it's a lot of pop tunes. I know we were talking about this a little bit off mic, but there's like one tune. Listeners, since this is a music podcast, I might as well recommend the Dolly Parton tune, Here You Come Again, which has more key changes than I have fingers and toes. It is a doozy. But outside of that and a couple of other select tunes, like, it's going to be real easy. Mackenzie, the girl who I'm doing this with, she is very talented. I just need to get my stuff together, and it's just a matter of listening to the music over and over again at work. But anyway, that's the big thing. And then Megan and I are going to get to take a little bit of a summer vacation. Nice. We're going to go out and go camping for a little bit in New Mexico. So we'll have already done that by the time this comes out. But I'm just looking forward to like campfires and camp coffee and campfire food. And we're going to take the dogs, so they'll get to be outside and kind of run around and enjoy themselves. So I'm really excited about that.
That is awesome, man. Everybody needs to be able to take a break now and then, and to have something like that to look forward to is always fun.
Yes, and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, up there in the mountains in New Mexico, it's going to be a little cooler than the, like, 95, 100-degree days that we get down here in West Texas.
This is the first time in my life I've probably ever said this, but we needed to stop raining for, like, more than 2 seconds.
Yeah, y'all have been getting dumped on. We've gotten rain, but it's been just a nice amount of rain because in Lubbock, we don't get any rain. Yeah. It's usually like super arid and terrible.
We will go like 2 days without rain and the yard will start drying out and the muddy patches will go away. And I'll be like, okay, we can go out and mow the yard. And then it'll rain like that afternoon while I'm on a conference call. It's like, all right, well, we're going to wait another couple days. And meanwhile, the grass gets taller and taller and taller. It's like, stop.
You're going to hack through it with a machete just to get after it.
I am about 2 days away from hiring somebody with a machete to get after it for me. It's like, hey, nope, it's beyond my control.
I know how that is. Yeah, for the first time in forever, last weekend, the grass was damp, just naturally damp. And so I Googled, how wet can your grass be and you can still cut it or something like that? And basically everything said like, oh, as long as it's not saturated, you're good. So I just got up and started mowing because it's like, it's going to grow while I cut it.
Basically, as long as your mower isn't leaving muddy trails behind it, you're good to go.
Yeah. And that was not the case. So, yeah. Well, I think we've about exhausted small talk time. Should we move on to this week's album?
Yeah, Chris, let's do it. So this week we're talking about On Dark Horses, Emma Ruth Rundle, September 14th, 2018. Chris, my first impression of this album was seeing the name and then going and searching for it on Spotify and realizing the top match was a Nickelback album and not this album. So explain yourself.
Well, it is thankfully not the Nickelback album you're thinking of. There, you sent me that screen cap from your phone that was a ton of
like 10
dark
albums.
Horses riding the dark horse, dark horse. Like, yeah. So on Dark Horses, maybe not the most original album title, but I discovered this album from podcast alumni. We've mentioned him before. My friend Jeffrey, pre-COVID, Megan and I would hang out with Jeffrey and our other good friend, Tim. Tim and Jeffrey were roommates, and Tim was a big audiophile. Is a big audiophile, and he has a really great sound system. He's invested a lot of money into speakers and a really good record player and needles and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we would do is kind of just hang out. Tim has a pizza recipe that is to die for. Nice. Homemade pizza. So he would make homemade pizza and we'd just sit and listen to music and eat pizza and kind of chat. And so Jeffrey brought this record over and it was just really captivating. I've heard music in this genre and I'm sure we'll get into that. But I feel like I haven't heard anything like Emma Ruth Rundle in quite a while. And this was an album that I binged. When Megan and I were first introduced to it, I must have listened to it, maybe into the hundreds of times just on work occasionally. Mm-hmm. Throughout the week. I would just put it on and listen to the whole thing. So that was kind of my impression of it. It was a recommendation from Jeffrey, and it's an album that I still like independently of this podcast. I was just sitting and listening to it at work while on the forklift. So that was my experience with it. What about you? Cause I don't think you had heard of Emma Ruth Rundle before this, had you? Which there, by the way, listeners, I'm not throwing shade at Wood. She's an indie rock artist. Like this is not, I'm not like, Wood, how come you haven't listened to The Police before, you trollop? Like, what's wrong with you?
Well, hey, I was listening to Loggins and Messina this morning, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, you know what? For one thing, I haven't ever listened to them, and I've heard that name half a dozen times. So shame on me for having no. Maybe that's my homework, as I need to listen to Loggins and Messina. That is Kenny Loggins, right?
Yes.
Is that yes. Okay. So I at least know that much.
And you have heard their music. You just don't know it. It's in
I'm
80s,
sure I have.
80s romantic comedy and 80s movie ever.
And so. Kenny Loggins was he was in everything and played with everyone, right?
Pretty much. But yeah. I've been listening to this this playlist on Spotify called Mellow Classics. And it includes Joni Mitchell, Loggins and Messina, Jim Croce, Warren Zevon, another guy who goes by another name.
Speaking of, you need to send me that playlist because I am now a Spotify user because all the music for that gig is on a playlist on Spotify. And I didn't feel like it was right to tell the person who was offering me some work, hey, can you pick a different format? I don't use Spotify.
Well, then we can announce that Spotify is our unified playlist app, and it's a lot easier for this podcast. I don't have to go find the Apple Music link anymore.
Absolutely. Go ahead and use Spotify. I'm still going to use Apple Music for my own personal music. But anyhow, we still haven't gotten on to how, your introduction to this. We've gotten lost in the weeds because of all that rain.
I think that I've had a pretty interesting journey on this podcast over the last few months. I feel like your list has a lot more eclectic selections than mine. It seems like more often than not, I end an episode or the Oracle segment of an episode saying something along the lines of, never heard of her, hope she's good. And sometimes I come out okay and sometimes I don't. Whereas when my list pulls something back, you're always pretty familiar with whoever it is or whatever it is, with one or two exceptions. That said, I was a little apprehensive when you told me, oh, she's like in a totally different space. And she being Emma Ruth Rundle is in a different space. And so I was a little nervous the first time I put it on. Friday morning, I had to drive to Houston, which has kind of become my Friday morning ritual, is drive to Houston, spend about 3 hours there, and then drive back.
It's a rough Friday morning ritual, man.
It's been every week for a couple of months. And so I put this album on in the driveway at, you know, 6 a.m. or whatever, and was on the road, and the album played all the way through, and it looped, and it started playing again, and I didn't realize it had started playing again. And it did it again, and then I realized, you know, at first time it was like, this is a really long album. The second time I was like, oh wait, no, it's looped twice.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, I'll say it right now and get all the suspense out of the way, I really enjoyed this album. There are a lot of things that I really like about it. And I love what you described it as last week. I can't remember the term you used, but maybe it was like postmodern rock or something along.
Post-rock, yeah.
I think of this as more like modern rock in general. A style that I enjoy, but I did not immediately connect Emma Ruth Rundle and this album to that based on post-rock as a descriptor. So I was worried that it was going to be a lot more experimental and like more music theory class than music for me to enjoy kind of thing.
Oh no. Yeah. And, yeah. I can see that makes sense.
That's it. Like, I really found myself enjoying this album. And I think Emma Ruth Rundle has some serious chops on this album. It's a musical journey, and I will definitely be saying lots of nice things about it tonight.
The note on post-rock. So there's kind of a few genres that I feel like this fits into. You could call it post-rock. You could call it noise rock. Shoegaze is like another kind of genre descriptor for it. And it's a musical genre that I like by dint of Jeffrey's recommendations have kind of been kind of like dipping a toe into. And they kind of, just to jump into it, this album really ticks a lot of those genre convention boxes for this. As I'm sure you can tell by listening to it, there's lots of effects pedals and a lot of studio effects. It's a very like spacey kind of big epic soundscape sort of album. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of space. It's very big. And the other thing too, that I think is kind of interesting is that there's less of a focus on like, all right, we've got to have this poppy hook and we've got to write the song in 3 minutes and get in and out and we're done. Mm-hmm. And so all those things, like, I think that Emma Ruth Rundle does those things the best out of a lot of those bands that I've heard. Like, just for listeners, for your sake, if you wanted to check out bands like This Will Destroy You, they're from San Marcos, actually. Mm-hmm. And they are really good. A lot of instrumental music. They don't have any lyrics. That's kind of another staple. My Bloody Valentine, they were like the premier shoegaze band from like the 80s. They kind of started that bandwagon. And then Sigur Rós, which is probably the most like well-known out of the three bands that I'm mentioning. And they have some really interesting stuff. They play their guitars with violin bows. They've invented languages to write their songs in. Like,
who
some
do they
really
think they are? J.R.R. Tolkien?
I think they were inspired by him for sure. They must have been. There aren't that many people out there going like, I'm going to write a language today. But, you know, it's a very wide-ranging genre. And I think this is the part of that musical space that I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, and you've got a show note in here for album as a soundtrack, and I'm going to go ahead and steal that from you a little bit.
Do it.
And build on this album just kind of being, it's full of power anthems. Like, every song on this, with one or two exceptions, really sets the mood and sets a scene that just accompanies things well. What was your take on that?
Yeah, so kind of an interesting production note, something that I read about this album that I didn't really put in the show notes, is that Rundle wrote this album kind of on the heels of sort of some like crummy times in her life that she had just recently come out of. Her album before this is actually the title of her album that she released in 2016. It was called Marked for Death. If that gives you some kind of indication of where she was at.
In a dark place, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. So when she recorded this album, she brought in other musicians. I think this was a lot more collaborative for her. And actually the guy, I think, who played rhythm guitar on it, Evan Patterson, I think that Rundle and Patterson struck up a relationship and kind of found each other and then recorded this album. So there is a lot of like anthemic kind of, there's a lot of joy in this album, as like kind of dark and moody as the music is. And I think that's part of what makes this album so, like, I don't know, so fascinating. But I've completely lost the thread. What were you asking me about originally?
I was asking
go back a little bit, because our listeners are like, what is he talking about?
To close a point from my research, she married Evan in 2018, right after this album came out. So
thank you.
They did strike
That's
up
why
a relationship.
Two of us. Yeah.
But yeah, the original question back 16 minutes ago, we'll edit all that out, was what your thoughts were on this album as a soundtrack.
Oh yeah. So as a soundtrack, I think that kind of energy created some really cinematic, big emotional moments. So I actually, we've talked several times about sort of sense memories that develop around music and, you know, just kind of the associations you make. I read a science fiction novel the year that this album came out called Consider Phlebas, which is a reference to Greek something or other. But it's a science fiction novel about this like shape-shifting mercenary that gets recruited by a big galactic empire to retrieve like an artificial intelligence from this like race of ships that had crashed behind enemy lines. So really like high science fiction type stuff. This album kind of provided me a way of adding an extra level of experience to that novel. And to be honest with you, like the novel was kind of a middling affair. Like I couldn't even tell you the names of characters. I had to look up the synopsis. But there were scenes in the novel that were really like dark and weird and mysterious and alien. And so it was a really fun experience and made me like this album even more, even if, you know, like I would venture to say there's no real science fiction-y component to this album, but it was it's just something in the depth of it. It can fit kind of a ton of things.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned sci-fi. I watched The Tomorrow War this weekend after putting Mav to bed one night. And for those of you living under a rock with dial-up still, it's the Chris Pratt Amazon Prime feature movie that they've been advertising for, it seems like, 5 years. Like,
it's yeah, it's everywhere. Been everywhere. It's in front of every YouTube video you watch. It's,
oh, yeah. It's on you Instagram scroll by every 10 third. Times
on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yep. And watching that movie, having listened to this album so many times this week, that album is really perfectly fit to be the soundtrack of this album. And that movie is taking a lot of flack for kind of sucking in a lot of ways when it comes to like military tactics and their understanding of how firearms actually work.
Oh, no.
Like putting long range scopes on guns with like 7-inch barrels. So like they can't shoot long range, but it's got a long range scope on it. It's like, what's the purpose? So,
that's fantastic.
It's taken a lot of heat from like the firearms community. But as far as like sci-fi goes, it's a phenomenal movie. It's got a great storyline and it's worth watching. And being a father, it messed me up just like most sci-fi does nowadays, where you travel into the future and see your child 30 years in the future and then have to go back to seeing them as a 9-year-old.
That's tough.
On an alternate timeline that you know you can't duplicate. So.
Ooh, I'm going to have to give this movie a listen. Does it have anything to do with The Edge of Tomorrow?
No, it does not.
No?
But
okay.
Don't quote me on this. I think the cinematographer is the same.
Oh, okay.
So it has a very similar look and feel.
Yeah. Well, the aliens and the time travel thing, I was like, wait a minute. They've already done this with Tom Cruise. Yeah, I think the secret sauce here with this album, the reason that it has such potential as like accompanying a narrative, is because there's a lot of atmosphere in the same way that like a good science fiction novel has, you know, should any novel really should have a feeling, a world that you are sucked into. This album has that for me. I was thinking about it. The production of this album, this might be the reverbiest album that's ever been on Two Dudes and Tunes. Everything sounds like it's in like a giant arena or a cave or something like that, which can be done really poorly and kind of wash everything out. But I felt like in this album, it sounds cliche to say, but it was an extra instrument. You know, all the effects on this album really serve the song and the mood. And kind of an interesting note, and you should give your opinion on this because, you kind of had some thoughts about it. I felt like Rundle's vocals were a little hard to understand, but her voice was still like the main thing that I noticed from this album. So I don't know if that's a production thing or maybe how Rundle sings, like maybe I'm just not understanding it. Maybe I have hearing loss because I myself have played in super loud bands that are not half as good as this one is. Like, what do you think about that?
Well, 2 points on that. I think the atmosphere that this album creates is very cinematic in nature. That's elemental. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's a lot of reverb on a rhythm guitar here, but it's not so wet over on the drums that it becomes muddy. The exception to that is point two, kind of her voice on a couple of the tracks. And I think that's intentional. I think it's trying to drive a sort of emotional tension between you and your listening experience.
Yeah.
I did not struggle to understand her lyrics from a lyrical content focus. Where I struggled on a couple of tracks was to understand them philosophically. Like, what is she really singing here?
Not what is she saying, but what is she saying?
Exactly.
Basically. Exactly. Yeah.
And that's why English sucks.
English, the vaguest and hardest to understand of all languages.
But the point being to that, that there's a lot going on with this album. And I think the voice being a little bit muddy or in a couple of the tracks is intentional to help drive that kind of edge of the seat tension. Why this album works with sci-fi or with suspense in general is it's building tension between you, the listener, and her, the performer. And each song, each track kind of has a resolution that kind of resets you, and then it builds you back up on the next one, and then it resets you. It's like a good suspense film in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I will say about that is this is different from some of the other albums you and I have listened to from your list, where I felt like it kept building and building and building, and it never gave you that release. It never gave you a minute to like catch your breath, and then the next track was just building on the last one or was totally down somewhere else, and it was disjointed or didn't feel right, and there was no way to tie it together. At the end of this album, I felt like listening to it again because I wasn't exhausted by the experience of riding that roller coaster. It was again.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's kind of what I think.
I think that's exactly the thing that I love maybe the most about this album is it has a really great sense of dynamics in that it actually gives you a payoff like you're talking about. And that's a thing that I think, I mean, like all music ideally should have that regardless of genre or whatever. But if you look at kind of the heritage of like rock made on the West Coast that has its origins in, you know, in the grunge of the late 80s and early 90s up into, you know, like kind of the indie singer-songwritery stuff, up into like where we're at now with these like shoegaze bands, there is a big emphasis on those kind of musical moments. The band that Jeffrey was in, but he moved, him and his wife moved to, I forget where, but they've since moved. But the band that he was in before this, before he moved, I got to see them live a couple times, and they kind of fell into this camp of like shoegaze, post rock, noise rock, that kind of thing. And they were excellent at creating moments, moments that built up and built, and you hit your peak and then you came back down from that. And I think that is just something that's sort of inherent to this genre that maybe, you know, like a pop tune is just kind of kick along at kind of the same pace or what have you. But here it's definitely present, and there's a lot of musicianship on display that kind of builds these really big, echoey, cavernous spaces, but also brings you to really quiet, intimate places as well. And I love that.
Well, one thing I appreciate about the production of this album is even though it feels like it's a big echoey space, it doesn't feel like I'm listening to it recorded on somebody's iPhone in a big echoey space. It feels like I'm in that space with them while they're performing it. And that's one of the things that is a huge pet peeve. I wouldn't say it's a sin to me, but poorly produced music just sounds like junk when it's overly reverby and overly spaced out. Yeah. It sounds like it was recorded in a garage and it just, no, not at all.
Yeah.
This album feels so like I'm in the garage with them, and I like that.
So. And I even think, cause I was watching a live video of their KEXP performance, and I'm almost positive that she said one of the production techniques that they used was playing together. I'm not sure. I wouldn't go as far as to say this album was recorded studio live, but I think there was a lot of in the room chemistry, which is super evident on this album. Like it really has there's a lot of life to this album. Whereas, you know, on something that is super produced and everybody sits in a room alone with the producer and plays, that only works if the music is super thoroughly composed and the performers are really, like, there are a lot of things that have to go right. Whereas you can kind of get away with doing stuff together in a room a lot easier because that chemistry between people is there.
Yeah. And everybody made time to be there together. It's not like Steven Tyler showing up for an Aerosmith recording session six weeks later in a different studio to get his part banged out right quick.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's not a bunch of rich people flying in and out of a studio while a producer kind of like pushes them in the direction they need to go.
Don't look me in the face while I'm recording. Don't make eye contact.
Yeah, it's definitely not that, and I am grateful. I want to mention Emma Ruth Rundle as a singer-songwriter, or not a songwriter, although her songwriting is interesting. I want to focus on her as a singer because that was her voice is one of the more interesting elements of this album. She's really, I think, a big reason why I listen to this album so much. She's one of my favorite singers from the past few years. You know, on the surface, an album like this, I think if you listen to it without kind of a critical ear, you come away going like, okay, it's all like all the tracks are kind of the same. But really, Rundle's voice is super expressive. She's capable of a wide range of emotion. On the track Dark Horse, there's a lot of like menace and kind of like rebellious rock and roll energy. The tune Races, which to just tip my hat a little bit here, my favorite song on the record, is just so like plaintive and melancholy and folksy and ethereal and just kind of floats over the song. And then you have something like You Don't Have to Cry, which reminded me a little bit of like a grunge tune that like Eddie Vedder would do solo or something while the rest of the band like gets a drink of water or whatever. Like, she's just capable of a lot of different things. And I really enjoyed that. Like, I think this album yields something a little bit new and different each time you listen to it.
Yeah, I'm glad to know I'm not alone in this feeling. I think that Emma Ruth Rundle's voice is probably the best thing about this album. And that's not to take anything away from any of the instrumentation or the scoring or any of the just superb music that is on this album. This album would be a great album without her voice. But when you pile that into the mix and you provide that kind of power, that kind of emotional breadth, and really she's got a strong voice. It's not weak. It doesn't waver. It's not barely there. She is driving these tunes forward in a way that very few people, regardless of who you are, can do. Honestly, this may be a sin to mention, but one of my favorite bands who isn't on our list is Evanescence. And I have always liked Amy Lee, both for her piano playing and for her voice. And I became a huge fan of Amy Lee probably in about 2004 in a prior life when I was working in live production. I actually produced a funeral that Amy Lee was the goddaughter of the person who had passed away. And she did all the music for this funeral in this small 600 seat venue with a bunch of family and friends. And it was musically life-changing for me. She was so good. And it was just her and the piano and this group of family singing this person's favorite hymns and, you know, having a ceremony of life. And she was such a genuine and good person on top of just having vocal chops like nothing I had ever seen or heard. And so it almost feels like, okay, you like Evanescence. That's almost like liking Nickelback in a way.
Nah, man, not even close. Evanescence, I think, is experiencing a little bit of a renaissance among people our age who like loved it and were made to feel ashamed of it for so long. But Amy Lee is a fantastic vocalist. It's a good comparison, I think.
And I think that Emma Ruth Rundle has a lot of the same energy and brings a lot of the same energy to her music that Amy Lee brought to Evanescence. So I just thought it was awesome. Like the first time I heard this album Friday morning, listening to it, that was the first thing that popped into my mind. And it had been years since I thought about that experience. So it was kind of cool to be like, hey, I can tie this to something.
Yeah. Well, and to kind of take a sidestep here, there's a lot of instrumental shoegaze.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has to do a lot with obviously the musicians who are making it, but the genre almost begs you to just play and write pieces based on musical ideas and melodies and not try and fit a voice into the mix, because there's already so much going on. Mm-hmm. You have these bombastic drums, this really thudding bass. You have guitars that are either like super sludgy, as they can kind of be on some of Emma Ruth Rundle's work, or really high pitched, kind of super distorted stuff with a lot of delay. But I love that Emma Ruth Rundle goes the extra distance and writes melodies that not only sound good her singing them, but fit these songs. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this bed of music that she can either become a part of, as she does on a song like Fever Dreams, that's very like stop start, kind of a herky jerky sort of tune where her cadences and rhythms are fitting with things, or she can just kind of float above whatever it is that's going on in the music, and it just serves as kind of like a sonic bed for her to like be above.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in addition to her talent as a singer, like as somebody who is writing vocal melodies, I think part of what makes me return to this album over and over again is that the melodies are really good. And so, yeah, I think the Evanescence connection is not something you should be ashamed of, because Amy Lee is quite a fantastic singer. And I think, you know, I would hazard a guess that both of them are good at writing melodies. And there's something just in that basic skill of being able to not only sing well, but to create something that people are going to remember. And I think that's definitely something that Emma Ruth Rundle has done here.
I think that's a good place to end the discussion of the actual album, but I want to talk about some of the things I learned about Emma Ruth Rundle while doing research for this album.
Yeah, please do. Because I knew she did visual art, but I don't know much about it. And I had just briefly read that David Lynch was like an inspiration, which is bananas.
Well, and let's be honest, David Lynch, the cinematographer and, you know, neoclassical painter who... Actually, that's totally wrong. He's an impressionist painter. He's not a neoclassical.
he's something.
For the fun of it, audience, I sent Chris a whole bunch of images today of different artwork that David Lynch has painted. And my favorite one is named Rat Meat. And it's just, David Lynch's paintings look like David Lynch's movies in a lot of cases. Like he has a very dark common
and
theme.
Disturbing and strange.
Yes. He describes his paintings as being organic, violent comedies. They have to be violently done and primitive and crude. Uses mainly shades of gray with hints of vibrant colors here and there to make something pop. And is also known for painting whole words onto his canvases in like the middle of the paintings as well. And it was kind of interesting. So Emma Ruth Rundle cites him as one of her main inspirations, not only for this album, but for her creative life in general. And she has kind of followed a similar path as he has. She started out as a painter and a graphic artist and then broke out into music. the same way Lynch started out in art and has continued to do both throughout her career. And she's still really young. She's 37 years old currently and lives in Portland, Oregon. So she's kind of got that vibe going. She kind of sounds like she's from Portland just from the album.
Yeah, in general. She really does.
One of her other album or influences is the artist Kate Bush, who I didn't send Chris any of her artwork. But when you compare David Lynch and Kate Bush's artwork combined, that gives you a pretty good example of what Emma Ruth Rundle is into. And she does some weird stuff with horses. That's basically she's doing like semi-realistic impressionist paintings of BoJack Horseman.
Yeah, it is very, very strange, very surreal, which, you know,
fits the style of her music in a lot of ways, too.
It does. It's interesting. It's kind of an abstract comparison to make. But when you think about kind of the murky sort of nebulous spaces that occur in this album and kind of the melancholy atmosphere of some of the songs, and then you look at paintings that are really kind of like dark and strange and don't leave you with any one firm impression of what the piece is about.
Except as a money laundering tool.
Well, yeah, but I wasn't going to say that. I don't have any great money laundering tools like that right now, so I'm not going to throw stones. But, you know, it's just interesting. It's fun to see. It's fun to see the artwork that musicians do, because you can't help but compare the two things and kind of wonder, like, all right, well, what is making this person tick, and what are the connections that you could make?
The other thing that I wanted to mention is she's been, like most successful musicians, she's been in a number of bands and released albums under a number of different titles over the years. In 2013, she released an album anonymously under the pen name The Headless Prince of Zolpidem, which is probably the greatest band name I've ever heard.
Yeah.
But that kind of struck me as kind of like the Garth Brooks, Chris Gaines kind of thing. Like, I want to put this out there, but I don't want anybody to know that I did anything. Heads up, War on Zevon. But she quoted as saying, that was my somewhat anonymous, down-tempo, somewhat creepy electronic darkwave project. And I'm going to go listen to it after this recording.
You want to talk about five names. That was a lot of adjectives to tack onto that project. I'm curious, and I am also going to check it out because I'm intrigued.
So let's talk about Critical's reception for On Dark Horses now that we're back on track.
Let's do it. Sounds good.
All right, Chris. So this album is from 2018, and I was surprised when there was no Metacritic for it. At this time, it just says TBD, which, come on.
Mm-hmm.
We're 3 years removed.
Yeah, well, it only, I think when I was looking, the album only had like 3 or 4 user reviews, which is, I think, why it just doesn't have a Metacritic score at all. But some of the critics did have things to say. The reception of this album was largely positive. James Christopher Monger from AllMusic.
Another three name person. Come on, dude.
Yeah. They're a clan. They got to stick together. But he says, as a whole, On Dark Horses is her heaviest outing to date, but that weight has more to do with atmosphere than it does clamor. And one of the things the host of the KEXP radio show said was, when you go see them, their music, they're a very loud band. Mm-hmm. I think it doesn't necessarily translate, but it's neat that that translates to atmosphere instead of just noise. Mm-hmm. That was something I thought was neat that the reviewer noted. And then Aaron Benzinger from the website posttrash.com says, the ease with which Rundle is able to hold it all, the dark sound and the light sentiment at the same time, is stunning. And that was something that, we kind of touched on that I really loved about this album, was just that These songs, actually, when you look at the lyrics, some of them are definitely expressions of strength and identity, and even like a love song in the case of Light Song. But the music is very like heavy. And the word that crept up a lot in a lot of these reviews was gothic, which I don't really listen to any like gothic rock or anything, but it really kind of felt like it made sense. And so I think that if she gets any kind of mainstream traction as an artist, I think people are going to really connect with that because a lot of people are picking up the same kind of things.
Well, that's one thing. I'm glad that Aaron mentioned it in his review that I was really pleased with on this album is it is a balance. This album is dark without being heavy, and it's also light without being goofy. It balances so well without being kitschy or weird, or in some of the albums we've done before, we just felt like I was being dark for dark's sake. It's not there. And I really appreciated that about it. It made it fun to listen to while not letting me wallow in whatever I'm sitting in at the moment.
Well, and something I want to mention just briefly before we go on to our reviews is just that I think culturally we're sort of trained to compartmentalize our emotions artistically. If we're going to express happiness, it needs to be bubbly and fast and, you know, goofy and kind of silly. And if, you know, things, if we're expressing really sad emotions, it needs to be really slow and plodding and heartbreaking. And maybe that's just that a lot of really kind of fundamental consumer art is sort of one-sided in one direction or the other. But I think that the way that the joy in this album is expressed with kind of big, weighty chords and kind of these grandiose, you know, grandiose melodies and guitar statements, the fact that the drums are like kind of bludgeoning and almost like primal, I think is neat. It's an interesting way to express kind of the different aspects of feeling joy. And, you know, some of the sorrowful stuff on this is really like dark and angry. So it's not just like sad sack, mopey sort of music. And so I think there's a lot of depth to this album, and I guess we should go into reviews before I start launching into mine, because I think we've hit that point where we're both itching to give our final takes on it.
Sir, you're not allowed to give two reviews of this album. You're done.
Oh, no, I exceeded my word limit. It's like Twitter before Twitter let you write whatever you wanted for as long as you wanted.
Well, before we get into our reviews, Chris, reminding our listeners, as we do every week, we do a 1-6 guitar string review model. One guitar string being Nickelback's Dark Horses album, and which we've used that scale before, so nobody call me out on it.
And, Nick, we may be replacing one string with just
Nickelback.
A Nickelback album.
String number one, Nickelback. And then six strings being just something absolutely phenomenal, and you couldn't replace it for the world. Chris, this is your week. I'm going to let you go first.
All right. Thank you, sir. So as I get older, I find myself getting pickier about the media I consume. When I was younger, I would plow through a book or a movie, even if I wasn't enjoying it, because darn it, a man finishes what he starts. But not so much these days. At the ripe old age of 31, I'm kind of learning that I don't need to waste time with stuff that I don't like. If I've already sunk time into it and I'm not enjoying it, that time is gone. I can't get it back. I might as well spend my time consuming things that I like more. And so when I'm introduced to new music that I connect with on such a level as with this album, I tend to kind of latch onto it with a little bit of obsession. Phoebe Bridgers being kind of another example of that. But that's definitely the case with this album. There's something about this album that is eminently re-listenable to me. Like I said, I've binged this album. There aren't a ton of albums that I just listen to over and over again. But it's the grandeur of this music, the honesty and energy in Emma Ruth Rundle's voice. And like I mentioned earlier, just this kind of like primal caveman bludgeoning that the rhythm section engages in. All of it is just really compelling to me. And as we've kind of hinted at, there's kind of a delightful strangeness to this album that I can't quite put my finger on. It's just a little otherworldly, the harmonies, the rhythms, the textures. It engages with the part of my brain that really enjoys space and science fiction and looking at pictures of the Hubble telescope images. And I don't think that's textual. I don't think that's like in the album. I just think it's an added bonus for me personally. And we haven't really been very... We haven't had negative things to say. We haven't been very critical of this album. But if I had any qualms, if you like put a gun to my head and said, like, pick a negative aspect, I would have to say that I do feel like this album is too short. Granted, I've only just today realized that it was 8 tracks long, which I think kind of speaks to the quality of those tracks and this album as a whole. But you can definitely kind of feel that Emma Ruth Rundle is capable of even more than we're already getting to hear. And I would love to have heard it. I don't know if there are any unreleased tracks for this album, but this is one of the few albums where I'm kind of curious what hit the cutting room floor. And so I'm going to give this album 5 out of 6 strings, with the caveat that this is the highest 5 out of 6 strings I can give. I would have liked to experience more of this album and lived in its world a little bit longer. So what about you? How did you feel about it?
Before I start my review, I noticed it was 8 tracks long, but it's also 44 minutes long. So you're not getting shortchanged on time.
No, no, I'm definitely not, but I could just, you know, I could do with
more.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Exactly.
But isn't that the sign of like a true professional? They leave you wanting more.
It is. It is. That's what they say. And I have complained about people stuffing their albums with too much filler. So I'm really sticking my foot in my mouth on this one.
This time we'll allow it. You know, Chris, when I was thinking about writing my review, it was earlier this week, when I was first listening to this album and realized that I'd listened to it almost 3 times all the way through and hadn't even realized it had looped, because I was unfamiliar with the music at first and then just so captivated by the music. I gotta say, for me, the measure of a good album in my mind is if I'm willing to pony up the Benjamins and buy it on vinyl. And believe me, I tried my darndest to buy this album on vinyl this week. For the record, it is a pink album sleeve and a very paisley pink vinyl pressing. So I like pressings that are colored over just the traditional black vinyl. And so, and it's kind of translucent. It's cool looking.
Man, that's awesome.
It's back ordered. It hasn't been pressed since 2018. Amazon doesn't know when they're going to get any more. And I've bid on a couple of used copies on eBay and been outbid on all of them.
No.
So, that said, this album is a thoroughly immersive experience. At least it was for me. I felt like I was in the seat at the theater watching any number of great cinematic experiences, all just by listening to the music, like if I were blindfolded. And I loved that about it. It stood on its own in a way that most things can't stand on their own. And I'm really impressed by many of the aspects of the production quality. We've touched on how big it sounds without sounding foreign. It's right there with you, present while still being big and sounding much bigger than I could ever be. I really think that this album is a departure from our usual fare. It's not something that has normally come up even on your list. It sounds totally different from anything we've ever done before. And that's just because Emma Ruth Rundle is a unique person with a unique viewpoint on the world and a unique way of presenting what she perceives. I love that about it. I think that society drops a lot of caveats on successful women artists and athletes and whatever. You'll get that backhanded compliment. Oh, she's a great guitarist for a woman, or whatever the number of things. It's almost like it's a handicap to be a female in anything. And this album, being my first experience listening to Emma Ruth Rundle and then listening to a couple of her other projects over the week, really brought that to my mind. I was thinking back to when we did Alabama Shakes, Sound and Color, and I was really critical of that album because I didn't like Brittany Howard on that album, her voice or the way she did whatever. But listening to this album and thinking back to Alabama Shakes and thinking about what they were doing with the music that they created, I'm not revising my score of that album because I still have a ton of things against it. But yeah, it brought to mind that these are two musicians, Brittany Howard and Emma Ruth Rundle, who deserve and have earned no handicap, who have no qualifiers. They are phenomenal musicians, phenomenal singers, and phenomenally talented, period. End of sentence. They're just good, and they deserve to be recognized for that talent, along with all the pantheon of the greats that we talk about in day-to-day conversation. This album isn't perfect, but it's close. You know, you used the term a couple of times during this recording about noise rock. And I really, what I think of as noise rock and what you think of as noise rock must be two different things. But there are a couple of tracks on this album that just approach the point of being noise just for noise's sake. It's How Loud Can I Be? And It Doesn't Matter What's Going On because I'm just being loud and that's it. And those are a couple of things that I find as flaws. It's, they let loud be the measure of greatness, not necessarily the content of the song. So you can guess which track I may not like here in just a minute based on that comment. But the point is, it's nearly perfect with those couple of nitpicks. I'm giving it 5 out of 6 as well. I know Emma Ruth Rundle is not looking for validation from two guys from Texas who have a music podcast and a limited audience, but I thank her for sharing her music with us and sharing her art with us. It's definitely, her art is definitely weird, but it's definitely something that I'm going to carry with me for a while because it's fun in its own weird way, too. And I want to thank you for introducing her music to me. I think she's awesome. So 5 out of 6.
Hey, my pleasure, man. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Jeffrey was the one who introduced me to it. So shout out, Jeffrey, if you're listening.
We'll give him an honorary producer credit on this episode.
Heck yeah. There you go. It's not worth much. You can't pay you.
It's actually worth nothing. You have to pay part of the web hosting now, Jeffrey.
Well, I thought you told me the web hosting was free. I guess I shouldn't have said that on pod.
It ain't free, sir.
All right. Well, let's move on to favorite and least favorite tracks. I've already tipped my hand or hat. I think I said tipped my hat earlier, which I don't think is the phrase I'm looking for, because
if you're just going, tip your hat to greet
somebody. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I said the right thing, but I'll just go ahead and expound on that a little bit. So I mentioned the tune Races. It's a slow jam on an album full of slower jams, but I think that's what I love about it. The melody and the lyrics are I think Rundle's strongest on this album. And one of my favorite lines just lately out of any song is the very beginning of the song. She says, "Off to the races and I let it ride," what's changed us in our time. I'll take the wheel, but it's the hunger that drives. And I think that is, for one thing, it just feels good. Mm-hmm. Like, to say, like, it's a good collection of words that are just sonorous, but that statement, I'll take the wheel, but it's the hunger that drives, is kind of an interesting thought provoking exploration of like how we try and control our lives and maybe what it is in us that controls us beyond like what we try and think of consciously to say and do. And also, like, musically, it's a good road trip song. It's just kind of a you can imagine, like, driving around at the magic hour with your windows down, just sort of listening to the song. And it's the kind of, like, melancholy that I really resonate with. So that was my favorite. What was yours?
I'm going to take the title song of the album, On Dark Horses, as being my favorite. I connected with it because I felt like it was just the power anthem of my week. It really kind of drove my mood and my attitude for a lot of the week. And I really just connected with it in a way that I was kind of surprised by. It was exciting. It was energizing. And I feel like her lyrics to that song are just, they're so catchy. There's so many just turns of phrases in there that just work in a way that I found delightful. So On Dark Horses for me. Also, it has the coolest drum line in the entire album.
Yeah, we didn't really touch on the rhythm section, but everybody in this band is firing on all cylinders. And there are some really great, just thundering moments mm-hmm. for the drums. And that track is definitely one of them.
What was your least favorite?
Okay, so this isn't so least favorite. There's not really any track I dislike. And I kind of don't like having to pick one, but in the spirit of the thing that we're doing, I'll have to pick the least favorite, which is really just the song that I enjoyed a little less than all the others, but still enjoyed. I'd have to pick Apathy on the Indiana Border. Mm-hmm. With all the other tracks on this album, there are little like melodies or riffs or whatever that I can kind of like imagine in my head, and kind of catch like I'm familiar with them basically, but this was one that I didn't necessarily recognize right away. And I've listened to this album quite a bit. So I think probably, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's forgettable. It just wasn't the song that immediately leaped to my mind. What about you? What was your least favorite track?
Well, it should have gotten my automatic least favorite song, Apathy on the Indiana Border, because it has a tambourine in it. But I really actually enjoy the vocals. The lyrics of that song are really kind of contemplative and kind of not mind-boggling. This was one of the tracks that I had a lot of trouble understanding philosophically at first. It's also one of the tracks that has her voice a lot muddier. But mm-hmm. once you really kind of understand what she's saying and what she's saying, I liked it a lot more. So it did not get my least favorite. The track that I chose as my least favorite, because like you, there really isn't a track that I hated. But the one that just kind of throwing a dart at the board and saying, you know what, this one just probably doesn't work as much for me. And I found myself skipping towards the end of the week would be Light Song. And that's mm-hmm. the one track that really turns into what I would consider noise metal or noise rock kind of towards the end of the song. And it's just loud for the sake of being loud. And it just isn't my thing. So I didn't hate the track, don't get me wrong. But mm-hmm. since I have to pick one and I've been a jerk about making you pick them in the past, this is the one that... This is where I'll ding it a string.
If we have a conceit on the show, I got to follow through. I can't just tap out every time.
You invented the segment, sir. Follow your own.
Yeah, I know. I know it. Exactly. I got to practice what I preach. Yeah, Light Song is really funny to me just because I was reading through the lyrics today. And it's actually kind of it's a pretty exultant love song, which is funny because it's this really like strange and kind of mercurial song. There's like, I'm pretty sure that the rhythm guitarist, her husband, sings like an octave below her on the track. And there's this weird, like, guitar part that's harmonized that sounds very like ethereal and strange and kind of ancient. It's interesting, but yeah, they put the noise in noise rock in that tune and at least a couple others. So I can get behind that. Well, we've done it. We've arrived at the end of another journey.
This has been a hour and 45 minute session so far. So
there are a lot of digressions that you will not get to hear, listeners, because they're boring or it was me checking on my dogs. But we have one more thing we've got to do. Let's hit up the Oracle for a cookie.
Great Scott!
Stop the presses. Stop the presses, everybody. This is Wood Johnson from the future. There is no Oracle tonight. Why? Because Chris Robinson will be on vacation next week and out. You know what that means? We're going to tear the mold apart and we're going to do something totally different next week on Two Dudes and Tunes. Get ready to check it out. Now, that was Wood from the future signing off.
Well, folks, thank you so much for listening. If you have been enjoying our show, please rate and review it on your podcatcher of choice. We did a listener segment last episode, and we would love to do more of those. So if you have any kind of feelings about this album or the one before it or any of them, we might read those reviews or comments on air.
Yes, and if you want to get in touch with us, shoot us an email at twodudesandtunes@gmail.com, and don't forget to hit us up on Instagram or Facebook. Tell us what you thought of On Dark Horses. And don't forget to tune in next weekend when Chris goes on vacation. I'm left in control of the soundboard, and I get to do whatever I want. We may even have a special guest. We'll see you next week on Two Dudes and Tunes.